This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Kim, thank you for joining us. Now, of course, given the carnage in equity markets worldwide, you have found some pockets of growth in commodities, and namely in sugar. Tell us about sugar.
Yes, good morning. With sugar, what we have a situation where, sugar was one of the very few commodities that posted a positive return last year. It was up about 5%, which in normal times wouldn't be much, when you compare that to the overall commodities index, which was down 32%, let's say. That's a pretty impressive performance, and there are a few reasons behind that which has set the stage for sugar to continue to move up. In the big picture, it's simply that supply is rising and demand is dropping. I'm sorry, the other way around. Demand is rising and supply is actually declining somewhat. And toward the in the last several months of last year, the Brazilian currency, the real, was declining. Brazil is the largest sugar producer in the world. So that made its exports cheaper. So Brazil's exports and production increased. Meanwhile, India, which is the world's second largest producer of sugar, they were adjusting their subsidies. And what happened is that in the end, after their adjustments, it wound up that sugar producers were actually producing less. Meanwhile, in Brazil, there were weather patterns that were hurting the overall harvest. And, of course, if the harvest goes down, then the supply decreases, which is good for the price. So that set the stage for a rally in the price of sugar over the last 4 or 5 months of the year. The projections for next year are that there's going to be more strange rainfall thanks to the El Nino weather pattern, and that's going to affect production both in India as well as in Brazil. Meanwhile, demand is, the International Sugar Organization says that demand is going to grow by a little bit over 1%. Next year, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that is just enough to tip the supply-demand equation to the positive on the consumption level. So there's going to be just a little bit more demand than there is supply, it looks like. And in commodities, as we all know, it's just that tiny little marginal production at the end that makes all the difference. So there is a fairly easy way to invest in sugar. It's through an ETF traded on the New York Stock Exchange. It's called the iPass Bloomberg Sugar Subindex Total Return ETN, and its symbol is SGG. And I don't think we're not going to see a 30% return in sugar, but we might see a modest high single, low double-digit return, which is probably going to be a lot better than we see in a lot of other commodities.
Kim, on the basis of the weather argument, do other food commodities emanating from Brazil and India also command some kind of investment proposition, demand notwithstanding?
Well, the one where there is some sort of possibility of that is also cocoa. And cocoa it shows a similar sort of dynamic, and it's also affected by the weather patterns. And cocoa was also one of the very few commodities to post a positive return last year.
Do these, ETF instruments exist on the same exchange, on the New York Stock Exchange, Kim?
Yes. With cocoa, it's actually there are two ETFs traded. One is the symbol CHOC, C-H-O-C, and the other one is NIB, traded on the New York Stock Exchange.
Okay. You stay contrarian, of course, in Brazil because it's one of the cheapest markets by valuation right now. Not a lot of investors are looking at it right now because the politics are in a mess. Currency is, of course, nowhere. You reckon it's time to buy in Brazil? And what exactly in Brazil?
Well, Brazil is when you look at a certain valuation measure called the cyclically adjusted price-earnings ratio, that's a way of smoothing out the kind of volatility in the market's price-earning ratio over a 10-year period. Brazil has a PE of 5, and that makes it even cheaper than Russia. It makes it about a third the valuation level of Singapore, something similar for Malaysia. And in Brazil, as you mentioned, the currency has gone pretty much down the drain. It's facing it's in the middle of a deep recession. It's in the midst of probably the biggest political scandal in its history. The president is facing up impeachment proceedings over the next several months. And of course, the question is if it's too soon or if it's time to buy it. My sense would be that it's definitely time to put it on your radar. But the danger of being a contrarian investor, of course, is that you're too early. And in my mind, it's far better to wait until the very worst things have happened and things begin to pick up, and then you go in maybe 10-20%, and maybe you miss the first 10 or 20%, but that's far better than being hit by another 50% decline as things do settle. I think there are a few different ways to buy into Brazil or things to put on your radar. The first is the ETF for Brazil, which is EWZ, also traded in New York. And if you really want to take a punt, the country's largest oil company, which is one of the world's largest oil companies, is Petrobras. It's also New York Stock Exchange, PBR, and it faces enormous debt. It went completely overboard in investing in high-cost oil at the peak, and now it has one of the world's, relative to equity, it has the world's highest level of debt. It's been at the center of the political scandal in Brazil. Its market price is just collapsed catastrophically from its highs. And that is a company that could still be cut in half, or if things come together, it could triple in a matter of practically moments. But I think I'd be waiting to see just how the impeachment proceedings shake out, and also Brazil's central bank is facing a lot of questions about its independence, and if it comes out independent from all of the uncertainty, that would be a very positive sign. If it doesn't, that would be obviously a bad sign. But Brazil is one of those countries that I would definitely have on my radar for when things just seem to clear up a little bit.
Kim, would you have a view on China, beleaguered as it is from the first few days, trading days of the year? Obviously, the exchange just there have been better down, as well as the yuan. What's your sense of the Chinese direction?
Well, I think the Chinese direction is going to be flat to down. I think that in China, I think we talk about the Chinese market. I don't think it's really a market anymore. In a market, you have price discovery. You have buying and selling that is not artificially distorted. In China, you have a non-market player that's the government that can step in at any point to adjust the regulations to become a major buyer itself. It's not allowing insiders to sell, which is kind of astonishing. And my key concern about investing in China is what else they could do to make the market less prone to volatility. And that's if your main objective for a market is to reduce volatility, and that is the foremost objective, and everything else is secondary, then I would be concerned about what would happen to my money. And, you know, everybody knows that investing in shares is somewhat of a gamble, and you can make it a calculated gamble if you do the right analysis. If you don't, then it's more like a casino, right? It's kind of a luck. But with a casino, there isn't someone who is actively out to thwart your efforts. And my concern with China is that there is somebody who is actively out to thwart your efforts in the name of reducing volatility. So China is one of those places where it's very much buyer beware. And I personally would not want to get involved there.
All right. Thank you so much for your thoughts. That was Kim Iskin, the Managing Director and Founder of True Wealth Publishing, the Singapore-based independent investment research firm, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.